What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that's been peeking over the hedges of the Not the Top 20 studios all season. Coming up, blew me down with a feather. Hull are off to Wembley as Tigers maul Lions. Are they saints or sinners? We'll talk Southampton. It's advantage Stockport and Bolton in League One, but Chesterfield and Grimsby have it all to do. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And this is a mid-playoff pod for us. We're going to reflect on some first legs, look ahead to some seconds, round up a bit of news elsewhere too, and probably a bit of inane chatter that we are so famed for. It's me, Matt. I'm joined by my two regulars, Sam Parkin. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. I was doing some research on some future muses last night. Tottenham Hotspur, potentially.
Do you think they'll go up next year?
Do you know what? He did hit home. I walked in and the first thing, other than what an amazing stadium, and I haven't been here for a while, and this is great. What a position to watch a football match, so on and so forth. But I did think, like, what an opportunity if it was to happen for the Championship players who would maybe never get that chance to play in a stadium like that. It did hit home to think that would be mental, Tottenham in the Championship, because it is just such an amazing stadium. I've just about got home though, so I'm not going to be going there too frequently, even if they are in the Championship. Jesus Christ, what a journey.
Well, look, I mean, even if it's West Ham who go down, we'll get West Ham Millwall in the Championship next season. So that'll be pretty
You
fun.
Can cover that one, mate. Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty surprised that Notts County Chesterfield is at 8 o'clock on a Friday night, to be honest. I think we can say with some certainty that West Ham Millwall would be a high noon showdown at the very, very earliest. Adrian Clark's on board as well, of course. You all right, Clarky?
Yeah, I'm very good. Yeah, I enjoyed that little bit of spy reference for the Not the Top 20 guys, like that. Obviously, I shared a table with them recently, didn't I, at the awards.
So you live streamed it back to us, yeah.
Yeah. EFL friends, yeah. Anyway, let's move on.
Okay, let me, before we get started for proper, tell you about the offer from our friends at Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Right, as we are wont to do, we're going to start today in the Championship. And Adrian has just alerted us to the story that John Mousinho might well be off to Bristol City. Talks have been had or are ongoing, apparently. Let's not go too deep on this in case it doesn't happen and we end up with earth all over our faces. But it sounds like a really good move for Bristol City, Adrian. What about for Mousinho himself?
Yeah, I think a move for both parties, to be perfectly honest. Portsmouth fans won't want to hear that. But the bottom line is that I think Bristol City, you know, probably has a little bit more financial power. They've probably got a slightly higher ceiling as it stands in terms of their ambition and what they might be able to do going forward. So I would understand him potentially making that move. That said, there's been a distinct lack of ambition in January, the last two seasons from Bristol City, in good positions where they didn't spend money. And that has frustrated fans and it's frustrated managers as well. So just a little warning for John. I think, you know, they might sell you the dream. Whoever then actually give you the funds to go up might be another matter. So yeah, let's watch his space.
And for Pompey, Sam, obviously devastating for their supporters, as Adrian alludes to. I guess the only positive is that it's happening early. It gives them plenty of time to do their scouting for a suitable replacement and get that person in post with a good run-up to pre-season.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've got a bit of skin in the game here because his assistant manager is my dear friend, who I've just missed
Ooh,
the call from.
Hello. Okay.
Because he is coming for a drink with me next Thursday, pre-wedding. So,
and he said, should we do Bristol instead?
So we're organising the beer. But what can I tell you? I can tell you that there's been an interest there before. I think that's been well documented. And he's had conversations with the Portsmouth hierarchy. This is John Mousinho in recent days and weeks. And it's just going to be all about what their ambition is for next season. And if it matches his in terms of the squad that they can put together and attack the Championship with next season. But you'd be naive to think that anyone who's done a good job, a young manager in the Championship, with the amount of vacancies there's going to be, this summer, he's going to get linked. He's going to get linked to multiple jobs. So ultimately, it's going to be up to him what he wants to do at this juncture. Bristol City, I'll sound like a broken record, as a blank canvas. It's amazing, the opportunity, I think, what that could become. But Clarkie's right. You know, are you going to walk into a club where the purse strings are a little bit tight and you're not going to be able to improve on a mid-season finish? And Liam Manning did wonders getting him in that playoffs, but they fell well short, didn't they, in that tie against Sheffield United. So, it's a good job, but are you going to get significantly more of a budget, a better squad to realistically go and challenge? Because ultimately, that's what John Messina is going to want from his next job.
All right, well, keep an eye on that one.
Keep an eye on my phone.
Okay, yeah, that'll give us the best source. Right, it is a playoff tale as old as time. Team sneaks in on the last day of the season, carries that momentum to Wembley, while society, who just missed out on automatic promotion, are left rueing. Hull City go into Wembley after they beat Millwall 2-0 on aggregate. All the goals came in the second leg. Sam will give lots of credit to Hull. We'll give it to Mohamed Bellamy in particular, and to you for picking him out as the one to watch in the playoffs. Quite funny that his manager and his teammates were so cross with him for taking ages to get his laces done up to come on. And he was like, don't worry, I got this. Lovely goal. And then he gets the assist too.
Yeah, he's a very good player. Me and Clarkie were both at Oxford on Good Friday when he was the best player for about an hour, wasn't he, Adrian?
He was.
And he went off because he got a bit fatigued and he's not really lit it up since then. That's his only goal prior to last night. So, but I just felt he's got an abundance of ability. McBurney waxed lyrical about him post-match, said he can literally be anything that he wants. So probably it's about consistency and mentality if he is to make the next step. Could be the Premier League next season. But yeah, he obviously was that little bit of quality that had been missing across the two legs. And it came quite soon after Alex Neil had rolled the dice. And with retrospect, should he have just dug in a little bit more, just kept it the same and been safe in the knowledge that there's still a lot of time to go. You can nick something in extra time, potentially, if it went to that, or you can win via a penalty shootout. It didn't look like the game was going to open up particularly, but it looked like, yeah, Alex Neil went for it to a degree. Jokiriš changing the system, that was the big thing across the two legs, wasn't it, going into last night. And I had Steve Morrison down the line last night because he was covering the other game that BBC Radio London had, obviously at the Den, and he basically said Hull didn't make one mistake across the two games defensively. It was a really good rear guard action where they limited Millwall to next to nothing and then exploited them in that second half. Poor Alfie Doughty coming on. I don't know why he was so tucked in initially. I'm sure Clarkie's played left back on occasion. The danger was Bellamy. It was the only pass that Matt Crooks had, in essence. He was facing him. It was going to go there. And then he was hesitant as the ball was travelling instead of getting really tight. Obviously, you can still get twisted up. We know that. But yeah, it was really lackadaisical from the substitute. And the second was a horrible error from Jake Cooper, who was really poor across the two games, uncharacteristically so, on the ball, especially at the first game at the Hull City stadium. So didn't happen really for Millwall last night at all. Bit lacklustre, but they've had a great season on reflection, I'm sure. But all the credit to Hull City, because we did not probably envisage them making the top six. We certainly didn't envisage them getting beyond the Lions last night. So well done. Looking forward to seeing them at Wembley.
Yeah, didn't envisage them, Clarkie, getting into the top six in August, nor in December, nor when they failed to win any of the six games before the last game of the season. They'll obviously be underdogs for the final, but not by much, I guess. And we've seen the dangers of writing them off on multiple occasions this season, so there's no reason for them to go there thinking that they are second favourites, I suppose.
And they've got a chance. They've absolutely got a chance of reaching the Premier League. And I've said numerous times that I don't think they're good enough to go up, but they could. But what I would say is that I would back up what Morrison said there about making no mistakes. That they did do very well. So the first leg was quite difficult. Coburn gave them some problems. But the fix from Jokiriš to go three centre-halves was great, worked brilliantly, and they didn't really give Millwall much of a sniff in this game. So that bodes well for the playoff final, which is often cagey. And we know that they're one of the best counter-attacking teams in the Championship. They've got two brilliant wingers. Now, whether they play from the start. They probably wouldn't in a back three. But if they go for back four at Wembley, Bellumi and Miller, I tell you what, they're going to love it. They're going to absolutely love it on the counter up against Southampton or Middlesbrough. So, yeah, they're two excellent players. On the Doughty thing, yes, he could have got tighter, but it's still an amazing goal. Like, it's still a ridiculous finish. I think it was outrageously good, really, because there was no margin for error. So well done to him. And it was a great counter-attack goal for Gelhardt to score at the end as well. So, yeah, Jakirović is decent. I think he's got plenty about him. He has brought more goals, which was the brief. But he's also shown tactical acumen. He's shown that he will compromise. And he's shown that he can outsmart a manager like Alex Neil in a sort of, well, in a playoff, you know, in a match play situation. So I wouldn't rule them out. I wouldn't rule them out at Wembley, because they've got players that, you know, up top, out wide, and McBurnie. They've got three guys there that can win you any game.
Very likeable, he seems, doesn't he, Jakirović? Didn't love his jacket. Looked a little bit like he should be working the door at Box Park. Didn't love that, but I enjoyed him basically saying McBurnie can have a dozen beers tonight. There's plenty of time before.
Is that what he said?
But basically, he said McBurnie basically has a beer, win, lose or draw, was kind of the essence of his answer.
Exactly. And that I think a few in the squad do. There's a few old school pros in there, in that squad.
And plenty of turnaround before the final. Just a quick Dan Mann corner, because I've had him on the blower this morning as well. I enjoyed his amber nectar when the Bellumi goal went in. And that was the name of a fanzine, a Hull City fanzine. So nice touch. Must be some gold there if you go back through the archives of various clubs' fanzines. And also, I just watched the highlights this morning. 35 minutes with that back three previously this season. And then Charlie Hughes got sent off at the Hawthorns. So he'd only seen that trio in combat for just over half an hour this season. So it was a bold move. And probably the defining factor across the two legs.
Definitely.
Well, congratulations to Hull. Be interesting to see what happens next for Millwall. Right, the second leg of Southampton against Middlesbrough is tonight, as we record, 0-0 after the first leg at the Riverside. As we know, that's not really the story of this tie. You did cover the first leg, though, Sam. Was there anything that anybody who missed it should know on the face of it? Probably not.
Probably that it was a continuation of what Middlesbrough's season, late season's probably been, which is some really surprising, beautiful football, cutting open the opposition and not having anyone to stick it in the rigging would be my critique. And I always point to Clarkey's statement in January when he said, "Call Middlesbrough just need a Eddie Nketiah, another someone who can just stick around the 18-yard box and polish off some of these chances that are created by a variety of really talented players in Middlesbrough's armoury." I thought the position of McGree actually was quite interesting. It'd be interesting how they go about it tonight, but Morris is your kind of deep line midfielder who sprays it around the place, and McGree in essence was right up there as a 10, and he made some really intelligent runs, but there was a bit of ring rust when he got into the final third, into some good position, his finish, because he's missed a little bit of football. The main guilty party, I suppose, was Tommy Conway with three very presentable chances. I thought on the one that got blocked by James Bree, he probably should hit it first time. And then the one that he hit first time, hit the post, he probably should have taken a touch.
Could have taken it.
So, and then he had a swinger on his left foot inside the 6-yard box, which was as presentable as the other two. So he should have scored. Didn't love Strelec's performance. I thought Wood and Harwood Bellis just swatted him aside. If there was any real plus points for Southampton in what was a defensive, very much so, first half was the performance of the two centre halves. Defended the box brilliantly, and they grew into the game as so often is the case in the modern day football. It was a bit of a contrast after the break. Southampton pushed, had one or two opportunities. Harwood Bellis crushed that header off the bar, but in the main, my biggest takeaway was, you know, if Middlesbrough are in the ascendancy again tonight, can they find that goal scorer, because they were, for my money, the better side.
All right. Well, as I alluded to, the big story is Spygate 2. As of Tuesday, the day we were recording, Southampton have requested more time to conduct an internal review after they were charged with spying on Middlesbrough. The EFL has accused them of observing or attempting to observe another club's training session within 72 hours of a scheduled match and not acting with the utmost good faith to another club. Burra say a member of Saints staff was observing and recording training a couple of days before the first leg. This chap would not identify himself when approached. He deleted some content off his phone, ran off into the adjacent golf club where he changed his clothes and hurriedly left the site. Middlesbrough's club photographer took some photos of him, matched him to a profile on the Southampton website. It was all over CCTV as well. The Southampton CEO, Phil Parsons, has said today the club's fully cooperating with the EFL and Disciplinary Commission whilst also undertaking an internal review to ensure that all the facts and context are properly understood. We understand the discussion and speculation that has followed over recent days, but we also believe it's important that the full context is established before the conclusions are drawn. Adrian, you and I spoke a bit about this on Sunday night on the Totally Football Show. The best thing certainly for the EFL is going to be that Middlesbrough win the second leg tonight, isn't it? Otherwise, this is going to get awkward. It sounds like Southampton are trying to get their ducks in a row, but this is messy for everybody concerned, really.
Yeah, look, the expulsion isn't impossible here from the playoffs, so they could win and then get kicked out, which I don't think will happen personally. I think it'll probably be a financial penalty if found guilty. My suspicions, and we touched on this at the weekend, will be that maybe one individual is thrown under the bus, and certainly Tonder Eckert, whether he was involved or not, we may never know, because they won't want to throw their head coach under the bus, that is for sure. I imagine he may well plead ignorance on this, and if there's no evidence to suggest that he was involved, he'll get away with it. So yeah, look, it's a disgrace, isn't it? It is naughty. Middlesbrough are a team that you probably would want to spy on because they mix their shapes up quite frequently. And, you know, it would have been quite the advantage to discover that they were going with a back three ahead of that game. So, yeah, look, whatever Southampton do get in terms of punishment, if indeed these charges are proven, then they got to take it on the chin, because they've broken the rules. And, yeah, it's they'll have to just accept it. I wouldn't be upset at any form of punishment here, because it is bang out of order.
It's such a messy one, Sam, not least from Middlesbrough's perspective, because you can see, say, Southampton win, they get a fine, I don't know, 100 grand, something like that. And then Middlesbrough start thinking, well, maybe we'll see the EFL or Southampton, and you get mired in a legal mess that goes on for ages and ages. It's not something that is particularly good news for the EFL in particular, I don't think.
No, of course not. It's the last thing anyone needs. And these things can hang around for months. I mean, I don't know. It's over my pay grade, but obviously there's a bit of a precedent and they've changed the rulings. But I think a points penalty next season would be probably sufficient, would it not? I mean, I don't know if you think that would be too harsh, Clarkie, but I think chucking them out would be just too chaotic. I think it would be too stern. A fine, I don't think, is enough. It's too lenient. He can't be watching people's training sessions. And people that don't fully understand why you can't garner enough information from Y Scout and watching games. Let's say Thursday is their tactical day before the Saturday, as it was. You can watch the set pieces. You can get the team. As Clarkie says, Middlesbrough are a bit different in terms of the way they set up. I mean, Luke Ayling spent quite a lot of the game the other day in midfield. So they would have garnered that information. Having a team, you know, 48 hours before the kickoff is a big head start. And you can change your tactics accordingly. So, yeah, you can watch all the football and you can know about all the players, but the individual match game plan in this day and age, I think, is so integral. So, yeah, we'll wait and see what happens. I can't see anything, you know, happening, even if Southampton were to be promoted at Wembley, but for next season, and it becomes fiddly, doesn't it? Because if they're a Premier League team, I don't know how you get punished in the Premier League, because doesn't it fall under the umbrella of the EFL? So
I'd dock them a point. I'd dock them a point, because it happened in this season. I'd dock them a point, which means they're kicked out. They finish level on points with Southampton. That's the punishment, because if you want this to stop, if you want teams never to spy on another team's training again, you have to lay down a serious marker. And 100 grand or 200 grand is not a serious marker. Points penalties are. And if they want to eradicate this, it's the only way. And personally, I think it should be this season because it happened before the first leg. But it's not going to, because they're going to play this match tonight, and then we'll see what happens. But
yeah,
it's not a good situation, and I don't think Southampton are coming out of it very well at all.
I saw someone tweet the other day that Tommy Conway was a dead cert to do the binocular celebration if he scored. he seems the type, didn't he? And then yesterday I was doing a bit of swatting up, and he was outside the press conference room doing the binocular. Action to the waiting hacks. So I was kind of right. Well, the bloke who I read it on, the bloke on Twitter said it, and I wholeheartedly agreed that he's the one, and he's your man.
So do you reckon that this guy was wearing golf course clobber? Because he was apparently on a golf course. Do you think he had his like sort of...
Well, it says that he ran inside and got changed quickly, yeah, which would suggest maybe he was wearing his Southampton stuff, but surely he wasn't that dumb. I mean,
it's a hotel, isn't it, as well? And spa.
Yes, it's all owned by Steve Gibson, right? Yeah. It's a hotel, golf course, spa. That's the difference to it being, you know, a private...
You might as well have had the nine while you were there as the diversion tactic, wouldn't you?
I mean, you'd think you would have just been motioning, looking around for a golf ball.
Exactly,
like,
drop a little Strixen.
All right, well, look, we haven't heard the last of that. We shall keep you updated as the story rumbles on. But next today, we're going to get into League One's action. Before we get to the playoffs, Liam Manning's left Huddersfield by mutual consent 2 months after he took compassionate leave. There was a club statement at the time explaining the decision was made after the club were made aware of ongoing personal matters relating to the tragic passing of his newborn son Theo in October 2024. On Monday, Huddersfield chairman Kevin Nagle said stepping away from this role is the correct decision for Liam and his family, and that comes before everything else. Manning added, stepping down from Huddersfield Town has been a difficult decision, but one I feel is best for the club, my family and myself at this time. And obviously we wish him and his family all the very best, and hopefully we'll see him back in football whenever he is ready to return. The second legs of the League One ties take place on Wednesday and Thursday of this week. First up is Stockport against Stevenage. Stockport have a one goal lead to take into the home leg after one of, I think, the funniest goals of the season, eventually scored by former Nottingham Forest player of the year Super Benny Osborne. Anderson fell over, Stevenage dithered, Stockport scored, added time, and crikey, Sam, we needed that. It gave us something to talk about at this stage of the playoffs, because it was slim pickings up until that point. Big goal for Stockport, obviously, and a hilarious one as well. I mean, the stats will tell you they probably just about deserved it.
Yeah, I think so. It was a really funny goal. I enjoyed Anderson's face during the celebrations. Sheer embarrassment, because it's almost a 1v1. I think Charlie Good was getting across, wasn't he? So he was he did try and beat him, didn't he, on the inside. And yeah, just a calamity of errors, wasn't it? Piergiani initially losing the ball. He recovered into a position to deal with it again. Charlie Good dithered when he could have cleared his lines. And obviously the goalkeeper, Marshall, was waiting for one of those to do so. And then... yeah, he nips in Osborne and, yeah, trickles into the corner of the net. So, yeah, it was a very peculiar goal. Stevenage had their opportunities. There was that outstanding save from Adai in the first half from Jordan Roberts, and then a couple of Piergiani headers. The second one was a really meaty header, a good attempt, just a fraction over the top. And he'll be a threat in the second game from set pieces. And... they won there, didn't they? 3-1 in the league. I had a little look this morning. They've scored 9 in the subsequent 13 games, not scored more than one on the road, Stevenage. That was the last time they scored more than one, 13th of the December. So I would suggest 1-0 is your best bet, isn't it, for Stevenage, maybe? Go in there. I can't probably see them scoring a couple, given the recent form. And... facts are, I think that Stockport have just got a little bit more goal power. Sidibe had his moments in this game. Obviously, Louis Barry's back now also. So it's going to be a really difficult proposition for Stevenage going there, who just struggled to create chances in that first game, but they can take solace in the victory in the league. And Stockport haven't been brilliant last few weeks of the season, especially at home, where a couple of teams have been and won at Edgeley Park. So yeah, it's advantage Stockport, but I think Stevenage would have known it was going to be incredibly tight, and they would have happily accepted the 0-0. Just going to have to do it the hard way now.
Yeah, controversy around how Stevenage got into the playoffs in the first place, not Southampton levels of controversy, but nonetheless. Sam mentions, Adrian, those recent defeats for Stockport at home. Lost two of their last three, and one of those was against Port Vale, remember. But they have the promotion king at the helm in Dave Challoner, and they'll start the second leg rightfully favourites.
Yeah, completely, yeah. And look, history is on their side as well. Each of the last nine times an away side's won the first leg of a League One semi-final, that they've progressed. So, you know, the strong favourites, I would say, to go through. Let's hope it's a better game. I mean, it was just set pieces, wasn't it? I think four of Stevenage's six attempts was from set plays. Five of Stockport's eight were also from corners, wide free kicks, long throws. So it was a bit scruffy. Not much fun until that brilliant goal. But yeah, I'm with Sam. As much as I'd love Stevenage to go through here, one of my former clubs, you know, really enjoyed playing there. They look short going forward compared to Stockport. Stockport got good options. They've also got good options on the bench if things aren't working out. Stevenage will stop them playing, or try to stop them playing. It's how good they are at stopping Stockport playing in this game that will be the defining factor, I think. Yeah, and if Stockport score first, I think it's game over.
Okay, well, it's also 1-0 in the other League One tie at half-time. Bolton with a slender advantage to take to Bradford on Thursday. This is going to be a game that Clarkey will be covering. Mario Kosiuk-Dubry's goal, the only shot on target of the game. It was Bellumi-esque, Adrian, that strike. And he hit the post a minute later. I mean, that could be a key moment in the game just as much as the goal, you wonder.
Do you know what? I got those two lines written down here on my notes. Exactly that. But it was just like Bellumi's goal. And how big was that moment where he hits the post just a few minutes later? We'll find out on Thursday night. I can't wait to be there. It's going to be cracking atmosphere. I mean, it's a great stadium anyway, Bradford, anytime. But for a playoff semi-final against Bolton, I'm imagining it's going to be absolutely crackling. The Bolton wingers were the star turns, weren't they? Everything good in the game seemed to come through Sissoko or Kosiuk-Dubry, who I watched, by the way, at Arsenal come through. He's actually a Brighton player now. But yeah, he got into the first team. I think he played once in the first team. I always quite like the look of him. But I mean, yeah, I'm pleased to see him doing so well there. He's had an excellent season. But I think this tie is very much alive. I really did. And Bradford, my overriding feeling is that Bradford are delighted that it was only 1-0, because it could have been worse. Obviously, it could have been two with that chance. But, you know, they had two shots, I think, in the game, didn't they, Bradford? They didn't really turn up as an attacking force. Some great defending, you know, some really good blocks inside their own box. I think there were six blocks from Bradford inside their own 18-yard box in the game. And yeah, they just look a bit light at the moment on bodies going forward. A few of their key men are out injured, didn't have many options on the bench to bring on. So a lot of it rests on Caden Jackson using his pace to get in beyond and score. And he did do that in the game, and there was a shout for a penalty that wasn't given. He'll be a threat in that regard. And then there's Sasevic, who's that big game player. Their two best chances in the game came to Sasevic. It didn't really... finished particularly well, but you wonder, as a sort of pantomime villain ex-Bolton, whether he might have a say at Valley Parade on Thursday night. So yeah, I think it's set up beautifully. I really do. Because the bottom line is Bolton just won't play defensively. Schumacher's not really a defensive coach. I think he's not going to look to protect it. He's going to want to get on the front foot and score, and maybe score again to bury Bradford. And that should make for a better game, I think. And hopefully from a neutral's perspective, Bradford can put up a slightly better showing. Because if they can, this tie could go, you know, any outcome is possible.
Yeah, it's probably the makeup of the the front lines that interest me here. Clarkie just alluded to it. Bradford, Caden Jackson's pace was the most threatening thing about their makeup the other day, because Bolton play really high and obviously want to dominate the ball. So he did get in. Obviously, there was that penalty appeal. I think he was looking for it, actually. I think Farino made the challenge. Sarsabit couldn't force it in from the tight angle. But they've got Swan and Humphreys waiting in the wings, and they like to go with those two tens. Bobby Poynton's the obvious omission, who's got 10 goals. So he's going to be a big miss if he's unavailable. Lapsley played in this game. He gives you legs. So maybe there's room for a bit more creativity in that trio, Sarsavic, A another, and Jackson going into the second leg. And for Bolton, I kind of missed this last week. No Kenny, and who's had a really good impact recently. And Dolby only fit enough for the bench here. So Burstow led the line, kind of played with two eights. And there may be a change there with Dolby coming back in as well for this second leg. But yeah, they defended pretty well, I would say, Bradford. When you look through the extended highlights, there wasn't loads of opportunities, loads of good blocks, as Clark, you mentioned, and 1-0 is not a disaster, especially with what is now, across the last couple of seasons, an outstanding home record. So it should be brilliant. It's one of the places you get sent when you're covering games, where you rub your hands together. Brilliant atmosphere. Looked brilliant at Bolton, that said. So Clark is going to be in for a treat.
Bolton don't have a good record at Bradford in league fixtures. The last time they won a league game there, they had Nathan Blake and John McGinley up front, a 4-2 victory in 1996. We'll see how that goes on Thursday night. Next today, we'll turn our attention to League Two. And it's congratulations to Rochdale on their promotion back into the EFL. They beat Boreham Wood after a penalty shootout at Wembley on Sunday. Came from 2-0 down, equalising the 97th minute. They love a bit of drama, do Dale, back in the EFL after 3 years away. In other League Two news, Pete Wilder's left. Tranmere is on a short-term deal there, wasn't he? And kept them up, so job done as far as he's concerned. Both League Two playoff second legs are on Friday night. We'll talk about Notts County Chesterfield shortly, where Sam will be in attendance. Salford and Grimsby go first, though. 7:15 kickoff for this one. Salford with a 2-1 lead after winning at Blundell Park on Sunday. Grimsby fans camping overnight to try and get tickets for this one. There's only 564 that have been allocated to them. We all enjoyed the Bellumi goal and the Cozy Adubri one, Adrian, but I think Rhys Staunton gets goal of the playoffs so far, surely. Less than 30 seconds into that first leg of the weekend.
That was gorgeous, wasn't it? Yeah, 24 seconds, side foot volley. If anyone hasn't seen it, get watching. Yeah, just what the ball comes out of the sky, watches it onto his left foot, and he side foots it past a stranded goalkeeper. The goalkeeper did him a favour, didn't move, just stood rooted to his spot. And I thought that added to the drama of it as it nestled in the top corner. So yeah, Rhys Staunton did brilliantly.
To interject, two things. It would have looked better had the keeper dived. And two, is it a bit loopy to live too long in the memory for
Isn't
us?
That the genius of it, though?
Not for Staunton, but for us. Like, I want a bit more meat and I want a bit of a flatter trajectory.
I'm hearing you. If that was the case, you'd probably say it was outrageous. This was just very good. I quite like the loopiness because he watched it onto his foot, and I like the fact that the keeper just didn't even bother diving. He knew it was already in. So yeah, great moment. But obviously that's as good as it got for them. They were pegged back, I think, 3 minutes later. Messi defending down the middle, and they got a defender called Maldini, Grimsby, Maldini Kukuri, who was at Arsenal as well. Players think he played in the Carabao Cup. Great name. I mean, he's always going to be a defender, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. It was never going to be anything other than a centre half, really. Him and his partner got in a bit of a pickle. It wasn't great. And then they let in a goal from a corner, free header. I personally felt it should have been disallowed because
everybody did, didn't they? It was pretty outrageous that it stood.
Yeah, so I think they count themselves a bit unlucky. And I think the tie's alive, isn't it? Because Grimsby have a very good away record. I mean, only MK Dons scored more away goals than Grimsby in the season. And Grimsby actually picked up the most away wins in the regular season, 12. So they won't be daunted by going to Salford. But this Salford can defend, can't they? And they didn't really give, you know, Grimsby were the better team in the game. They didn't really give up big chances. We weren't really clear cut ones. You look at the stats and you say, yeah, Grimsby battered them second half, 8-1, but it wasn't really a lot there. I think this Salford team's quite streetwise. I think they're pretty solid. And I think that they will back themselves to get the job done. I think they won 6 of their final 7 games at home in the regular season, and a lot of sort of clean sheets in there, or it felt like that anyway. So, yeah, I think it's advantage Salford, but Grimsby have a chance because they do score goals. So, yeah, let's see. They probably feel a little bit hard done by here, Grimsby, to be behind. But the bottom line is Salford defended better in leg one.
Grimsby won 2-0 at Salford in October, Sam. So just do that again and you're through. Simple.
Yeah. Won both games, I think. So, yeah, they'll take confidence from that. I thought, you know, if it was a bold move from Sergei Yakirovic changing the shape, Carl Robinson hadn't played a 4-3-3 since January. So, since March, sorry. I'm going to start that again because it was March 2025. The last time they played that shape. So that shows that this was a cleverly thought out plan. I think it was playing the two wide guys to try and exploit the way that the Grimsby fullbacks push on. They certainly were transferring it quite quickly into that area, especially for Graydon on the right and Namai on the left. And also, you know, it's a hell of a shout putting in Namai, who hadn't played for a while, and Cisse, in essence, the game changer, who scores the first goal and played in a couple of months either. So he's put them straight back in, and to sound like a broken record, to regale an anecdote I've told 75 times, when I saw Carl Robinson in prep the other day, a couple of months ago now in Salford, he told me about those two players in particular. He said, Cisse, wow, what a player. I think he came from Wealdstone, and obviously he's been out for a couple of months at a non-league football, but thinks that he's got the character and the ability to step straight into the team. And And that is big shouts to do that. And also with what Clarkey just said defensively, the goalkeeper, Matt Young, he's got a long-term contract at Sunderland, 15 clean sheets already this season. That is what has changed for them drastically after they had a bit of an injury crisis at the start of the year. Him and Alowu, who was one of the players that was missing, he was colossal in this first game in both boxes, clearly. And that's his 5th goal from a set piece. So he contributes to both ends of the pitch. So I think Salford did a bit of a job, really, even though the second half was filth. You know, they put themselves in a position to do that. And that's where they've improved drastically across the season. But I loved Grimsby early part. They were my fancies. KBA had a few half chances. I like the way they set up. Maybe a little bit more direct now you've got Cookie up there. They were playing some stellar kind of football early part of the season, so it's a bit of a different look to this Grimsby team, but it's well set up, and yeah, they will not feel that they're out of it by any stretch, considering they took 6 points off them in the league programme.
How different the last few months of this podcast could have looked had Carl Robinson chosen Cafe Nero over Pret.
Mate, thank goodness, eh? Giving you some gold.
I mean, they're two very good places for a coffee, I have to say.
Yeah, just for coffee, though. You're not going to Cafe Nero to get yourself a croissant or a wrap
you
or
say
even
that,
a salad.
You say
don't mind
that.
It, I don't mind
I used
it.
To be a big fan. This is going back about a decade, but there was a little ham and cheese croissant. I know they all do them. Ham and cheese croissant in Nero was, there was just something about it. Excess grease, just, you know, just very buttery. It was good.
Okay, if it soaks the bag in which it came, you know you're on to a winner. As I say, some call to put Notts County Chesterfield at 8 o'clock on a Friday. Sam will be at Meadow Lane for this one, along with a rather large police presence, one suspects. The Magpies have the advantage in this one. Jaden Luca scoring the only goal of the first leg. Another fairly drab affair it was, not scored with their only shot on target there after Chesterfield had missed a penalty 6 minutes in. It's going to be spicier though for you on Friday, isn't it, Sam?
Hopefully, yeah. I really enjoyed going to Meadow Lane last year for the League Two playoff against Wimbledon. Nice summer's evening, early summer's evening, if memory serves. Crossing the old bridge. Yeah, not a ground that I've frequented much kind of since I retired. So, yeah, really looking forward to it. And I didn't realise, third time in 5 seasons that this has been a fixture in the playoffs. So, it wasn't a particularly good game. I thought that Chesterfield obviously started quite bright, missed the penalty. Bonus, who's been, you know, a standout for them across the season. And then Notts County carved them open for the opening goal, the kind of front three or the two tens and the centre forward combining for Luca to get the only goal of the game. And it was pretty in keeping with a lot of what we've spoken about already today. Notts County had one more shot, and I've watched it this morning. It was Jatta from about 20 yards, and it didn't get beyond the the bloke who was marking him. So it wasn't really a shot at all. It was blocked at source, one of Matt's favourite phrases in commentary, didn't get anywhere near the goal. So it was very much declaring once they got their nose in front. But the two tens are good. Luca, he's on loan from Luton, and your Pender's had a sensational season. I saw him a bit last year, early part of this season, actually, it might have been. And yeah, look, he had some good attributes, but he carries the ball really well. I think he's you know, pretty handy in terms of his defensive duties as well. We know what Jatta can do, but they just saw the game out, and Chesterfield didn't do enough, really. Belshaw made one save from a Tom Pearce free kick in the 64th minute. That was it. So they'll have to be better. And that kind of quartet that looked to dominate the central areas of the pitch, the two holders, Robertson, Norburn, the two aforementioned tens, up against Braybrook, Sturck and Mandeville, you know, that was a bit of a problem for Chesterfield. We know Paul Cook's 4-2-3-1 kind of man. He needs his support three to be creative and do a little bit more than they did in the first leg. Dobra went off in the first half as well, so I don't know how he's going to be looking before the second game. But yeah, very in the balance. And again, Chesterfield won both games, I think.
It was a 3-2 thriller at Meadow Lane, wasn't it? Early red card for not seeing that one in March. What do you reckon, Adrian? Who's coming up clutch in this game?
I think maybe Notts County will get the job done. Yeah, I was a bit disappointed with Chesterfield in the game. Thought they'd be much, much better. Obviously, they did miss a penalty, a definite penalty, really clear. And Lee Bonis, who's been in good form, dragged it on the post. They should have had a second penalty. There was a, I don't know if you remember it, he was just being pulled on his arm by Sarula. Obvious penalty. And he gets his volley away, and then they just play on. It should definitely be in a pen. So they can feel a little bit aggrieved, Chesterfield. Yeah, they won there this season. They won there last season. It's a good hunting ground for them. But that midfield set up definitely County had the edge, I think, and the front three I do like, you know, on those transitions. Your Pender is reliable. I think once he gets into those spots down the right side of the box, he can deliver, and he'll probably get opportunities to do that in this game. I've got a great stat for you, and it's not one that our pal Paul Cook will want me to read out, but I feel compelled to for our listeners, because Chesterfield's Paul Cook has never won a match in the EFL playoffs in 7 attempts, drawn 1, lost 6. It is the joint most games without winning in the history of the playoffs, along with Uwe Rosler. Now, his 6 defeats are also the joint most with 3 very well-known managers. Do you want to have a guess who they might be? Who's lost 6 playoff games
Warnock
before? No, one used to manage Nottingham Forest.
Oh, I mean, how long have you got?
Sean O'Driscoll.
Scottish.
McLeish.
Little bloke. Billy Davis.
Billy Davis. One used to manage the Republic of Ireland.
Mick McCarthy.
Yeah, and the other is a Crystal Palace legend.
Steve Coppell?
It is, yeah. So it's part of an elite group there. Davis, McCarthy, Coppell and Cook all lost 6 games in the playoffs. But it's nuts, isn't it, that Cook in 7 games never won a game in the playoffs.
And how many promotions has he had, though? Do you know, he's had probably 3, maybe 4 automatics.
It's automatic or nothing, isn't it, with Cookie. So, yeah, look, on that basis, Notts County should be heavy favourites to go through. Let's wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that all will be revealed on Friday night. Predictions-wise, not great for us for the 3 first leg ties we picked last week. Adrian was bang on the money with Hull 0-0 Millwall, but they were your only points of the week. So you got 3. Sam and I both got 1. What does that mean in the grand scheme of things?
It's bad news for you guys. Yeah, you're on 54, Sam's on 65, and I'm on 71. So, the lead's slightly extended.
Okay, well, we've got more games than usual this week. So
yeah,
I
should query that, really. I wasn't consulted over this, but it's fine. Yeah, let's wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you just extend your lead further. Go on, then. You go first on Southampton Borough tonight, Adrian.
1-1, and it's going to go to penalties.
Okay, we'll just take the 90-minute score, I think, just for simplicity. Sam?
I'm going to go for Southampton here. I'm going to stick to my guns. I thought it was going to be Millwall, which I was probably wrong about. I'm going to go Southampton, maybe Middlesbrough to take the lead. Southampton 2-1.
Okay, I'm going the other way. I think Borough are going to win 2-1.
Can I have that 90 and 120 minutes, the 2-1?
It's 90 minute market only.
No.
Yeah.
Is it? Really?
Yeah. I'm sticking with your original prediction there. Bradford, Bolton. Go on then, Sam.
One each. Bolton to be cruising, maybe. Bradford to equalise, but all in vain.
1-0, Bradford. It goes to pen for me. Adrian?
2-1, Bradford. Maybe Bolton nick an equaliser in extra time to go through, but 2-1, Bradford in 90.
Right. Stockport v Stevenage. I'll go first on this one. 3-1, Stockport for me. Adrian?
2-0. 2-0 Stockport. Yeah, professional job.
Clean sweep for the Hatters, Sam?
Yeah, 2-1. 2-1.
2-1. Salford versus Grimsby. Adrian, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Salford here. I think even though the tie is alive, I think Salford, I've got it in them to see the job through. They impressed me this season. Grimsby score goals, but I don't think they're quite good enough defensively. So Salford 2, Grimsby 1.
Sam?
Thinking along the same lines, 1-0 Salford.
Okay, I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. Notts County v Chesterfield. Last of all, I think this is going to be more fun than the first leg. I think it's going to be 2-1 to Notts. What do you say, Sam?
3-2 Notts.
Oh, a repeat. Well, a reverse of the scoreline in March. Adrian?
Desmond.
Okay.
2-2.
Let me remind you before we go of the offer from our partners, Quinbet. You can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's applies, 18+, and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Slim Pickens tweet of the week. Wise, I'm afraid, listener. Grimsby, though, did post simply, it's not over, hashtag GTFC. The thing that caught my eye about this, Sam, were the pictures that they chose. The caption is, it's not over. They picked four of their players looking about as sad as it's possible to look on a football pitch. I love the captain looking straight from the 80s with his moustache and hairdo combination. Because it's not over, might they have picked somebody looking a little more stoic than disappointed?
I'm in total agreement with you there, mate. Yeah, you wanted maybe... I don't know, because obviously they are kind of just ambling off, aren't they? Dejected, so it's difficult. But maybe a montage of photos from the season would have done there. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, just something to raise the spirits in the aftermath of the defeat. But it's banged the tweet because it's had one reply, so it's done its work to get a bit of traction anyway. But yeah, not it doesn't really marry up, this does it?
Marry up for the Mariners. The one reply, Clarkie, comes from Andy Nunn. Do you think that Dave Artell will be taking Andy's advice and showing the players the 2022 playoff games? I rather suspect he might not.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I mean, one reply is just embarrassing. Come on, Grimsby fans. You know, get on board with this rallying cry from your club. It's, just 6 retweets, 7,300 views. It kind of got what it deserved.
Okay. Hopefully we'll have something better to discuss on Twitter.
He's a World War II veteran, isn't he, Green?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And from the look of that picture, he's remembering the horrors that he saw. Or maybe he just watched the first leg of Hull v Millwall. We'll never know. That's where we're going to leave things for today, though. Hopefully the chaps are going to have a nice time on Thursday and Friday at their respective games. Hopefully you get what you want from them too, listener. Back with you again next week. For now, though, it's goodbye.